Bloodfest, and Horror Zombies from the Crypt. It's a Halloween Spooktacular on Amigos, episode 323. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're going to be talking about two spooky, scary horror games for the Amiga: Bloodfest and Horror Zombies from the Crypt. Now, Aaron, anybody that knows you knows that Halloween is your favorite holiday, right?
No, not really.
Oh, okay, well.
Now, of course it is, but I love it. I'm just yanking your chain. Trick or treat, pal. No, I love it.
So tell me, don't tell me your favorite thing about Halloween. Give me your top three favorite things about Halloween.
Well, candy is right there at the top.
Yep.
I like the community aspect of it. Right. Mm-hmm. Where like everyone gets together and does stuff. You take the kids out. Everybody's giving out candy.
Yeah.
I like that part of it. And I do like the fact, this is going to sound sort of creepy, but I like the fact that you're bringing the kids and the family in touch with a little more of the darker side of things. I always like that. You know, I'm a big fan of that sort of reading and media, you know, the Twilight Zone and stuff like that. I love the Richard Matheson. I like the idea. You've got that part of the spice of life is getting to go down that road, the dark road a little bit. So I think it's nice when the dark road sort of takes front and center stage before the niceties of Thanksgiving and Christmas come around.
Sure. I think that's, yeah. And traditionally, of course, that's the Halloween comes from All Hallows Eve, where all the demons come out, and then All Souls Day, the day after it, where the saints come out and do battle and emerge victorious. So you're not wrong.
Is that the way it went down?
Yeah, that's
that sounds like a pay-per-view, but right there.
I think it was a steel cage match.
Oh, man.
So, do you have, before we move on to the news, I got to know, what was your all-time favorite Halloween costume?
Oh, man. I've had a bunch of wacky costumes over the years. I did like my minor 49er outfit I wore one year, dressed like the old grizzled miner. That was pretty fun. You know, one year I just went to the, you know, that place that sold Joanne's Fabrics. You ever been over there?
Yeah,
like, there's no reason to ever go there. Okay.
No.
But I went there one time to make a mummy outfit. All right. And I bought enough fabric to cover my whole body. All right. So it cost me hundreds of dollars. And I'm not lying when I say that, because I'm a big guy. And then the night of the big party, I had myself wrapped up in all this gauze or whatever it was. They've got a name for this stuff. It was, I don't know, what something that looked like.
It's veins. Like muslin, I think, is something what like the technical term. Yeah.
And it never occurred to me, because when you think of the mummy, you think the guy in the movies, you know, lawn chain, somebody, or, you know, other guys. And they look cool. You know, they look like a mummy. I looked like a very fat guy who'd been in a skiing accident. That's what I looked like. Let me tell you something about the mummy outfit. Form fitting, you betcha. It left nothing to the imagination.
You never really see husky mummies.
No, you do. It's funny. But I think when the mummification process, they defat you to a certain degree, you know, and I think they stuff you with flowers and stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons you don't see a lot of fat mummified bodies, because there's not a lot of flowers. There's not that many flowers and spices around. You're not going to waste all of one guy. You know, you go get the most emaciated guy you can find. You stuff him with all that stuff when you mummify him. But I did break the mold and showed that, yes, there could be a portly mummy that wanders around. But it was not what I would call a good look. In fact, Teresa at the time wouldn't even be seen with me because it was so stupid looking. And it was unbelievably ludicrous costume. But I love it because I've never seen anyone else do it. So there you go. What about you?
You know, I bought, man, this is probably my favorite Halloween costume, was just a big bottle of Heinz pickled relish. You know, I bought this costume off Amazon.
So this is a costume that looked like pickled relish.
Yeah,
this was. I was afraid you were just talking about, you just dumped a bunch of pickled relish on your naked body.
That would be frightening. but yeah, I loved wearing around it. I would dance around the classroom. It was like, you know, pickled relish. So,
you know, I know my least favorite costume is your green guy costume.
That
was even
number
worse
two.
Than a mummy costume. That was
you know,
no
this
good.
Time last year, this time last year, I was dealing with the unpleasantness.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and actually
yeah.
this was this past year on the Halloween show. Do you remember what we did?
No.
No idea. I was making thumbnails this morning, as I do in most of my spare time. And so I had a chance to look back, and we did BloodNet last year on the Halloween show.
Oh, yeah, the vampire cyberpunk game.
And this was one of the rare episodes where you, me, and Brent all joined forces because we weren't sure if I was going to be able to be on the show.
I do remember, because we had Brick fill it in for you, but you pulled out. You kicked out at the last minute, Boat.
I did. And I made an attempt to dress as Yukon Cornelius, but I bought an incredibly cheap beard on Amazon. It literally was falling apart as I was wearing it on my face. So we'll have to try that again next time.
Never cheap out in the beard, Boat. I've learned that the hard way with some of my Santa outfits, as you'll recall from one of our Christmas shows. Remember that cheap beard I had that one year?
Oh, yeah.
Santa looked like a 10-week-old wino. He was just going to work on the bottle. Horrible.
Well, I'll tell you what else is going to work this week, Aaron. The Amiga News.
Amiga News.
All right, Aaron. We're going to kick things off with a tweet from your friend and mine, Mr. Edu Arana. Okay.
Yes.
I'm really eager to hear your thoughts on this thing, Aaron. This is, you know, he's always going to work over in Spain, making, you know, in his lab, making all kinds of wacky peripherals and things for your Amiga, internal components, if you will.
Yeah.
And this is a Mr.-like solution for an A500 case. So what this is you've got a DE10 board, your Mr. board, and he's actually created a header for it that you can put in an A500 case and connect an A500 keyboard to. So basically what you're doing here is you're putting a Mr. into an A500 case and being able to use the keyboard, not unlike your old Keyraw special with the C64, Aaron.
Yeah. It's funny. I knew about this a while back. I don't know if I'm on some kind of secret list or something, but
probably.
I was tipped off, Boat, about this project somewhere. And it's interesting, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me about this hilariously because of my highly publicized efforts with the with his previous incarnation, the old Unamiga, which I've got hanging right here, mm-hmm. and the problems I had. So I will say, first of all, it's a clever idea. And Edu is a smart fellow. He's very creative. I have two problems with this, really. One, I don't think the Amiga keyboard is necessarily the best keyboard, and mm-hmm. it's not necessarily the best keyboard for the Mister, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I mean, it'll be okay, but it's not the best. Like, very similar problem I have with the Keyraw and the C64 keyboard. Not the best keyboard.
Right.
And so you've got that. And also, my keyboard ultimately stopped working after I had it hooked up to the Unamiga for a while. I'm not saying it was the Unamiga's fault. I'm just saying it stopped working. I don't know what happened to it. Secondly, as I say, with all the, and not just Edu, but any of these products, when you buy these low-run boutique electronics items, buyer beware. You know, this guy and several other people that sell these things, he's overseas. Shipping right now is brutal. It took me forever to get stuff shipped from over there. And if something goes wrong, you've got to realize that you're going to ship this thing back to Spain or wherever. Mm-hmm. And there's possibilities that things can go wrong, like just like on my Amiga with the resistor problem, with the chips not being soldered down correctly. These guys aren't like big time electronics manufacturers. These are guys doing it in their back bedroom. So you've got to understand that sort of thing when you buy them. That much said, if you've got an empty 500 sitting around and you want to put a Mr. in it, this is the way to go. Now, if you want my true opinion, the thing that I've got here with the Mr. in it, that our own Dave Z printed up for me, this bad boy right here, I'm going to go to Still Store so I can show it yet again.
They call it the Mr. Wedge.
Yeah, this thing right here is awesome. It's awesome. It does everything you want, and it's cheap. You know, it was not hard to put together, and it works. It works great. So anyway, that's the way I would go. But if you want something, you know, if you want to take a chance, I don't know, what does it say what he's charging for these things, Bo? Did you catch?
I don't think they've come to market yet. I think he's just announced that they exist, and I think they might be listed on his site later on.
I mean, what do you think about it, Boat?
If you've got a broken 500 and you're a real big Amiga fan, you could probably do worse than something like this, because, you know, what I envision in the future is there's going to be something like the DE10 Nano. Something is going to come out. It's going to be mega cheap. It's going to be like Raspberry Pi cheap. And then once that cost barrier has come down a little bit, you'll be able to buy five or six of these things, and you can effectively, you know, with these header boards, replace, you know, your aging and non-working motherboards and your classic PCs with FPGA solutions like this to get a really accurate simulation experience.
You know, I guess it's one of those things, everyone's got their own opinion. I mean, that thing Neil is selling, the little console, and it's, which is sort of a similar, it's a header for, it's effectively a header for a mister. Right. I mean, you could go that route as well. So, I mean, at least, hey, the options out there. I can't imagine, I just can't imagine there being that many people that would want this, because, you know, how many people just have a junked 500 with a working keyboard sitting around? It can't be that many. So, you know, it's going to be a limited run. But it's still a clever idea.
Well said. Let's move on, Aaron, to a YouTube video that I watched this week. I don't know if you got a chance to see this or not, but this is by a coder called Coding Secrets. And this is one of the guys that first started publishing on the Amiga, or he first started coding on the Amiga, but he went on to form Traveler's Tales, which have done the Lego games and all kinds of other games since then. This is... how he coded Leander for the Amiga. Leander, if you can recall, Aaron, is a side-scrolling platformer, action platformer. It's a very beautiful game. I would say it's in the top five best-looking games of its genre on the Amiga. The sprite, your main sprite, Mr. Leander, I think is what his name is. He is beautiful. He moves beautifully. He's big without being chunky and awful-looking like Sodan. This is a really, really great example of how you use what's known as the copper chip in the Amiga to get these effects, because this is not something the Amiga could easily do right out of the box. And he goes into, I would say, moderate detail in how this effect was achieved. I could sort of follow along, not coming from a programming background. I thought this was a really interesting video. And it's always neat to hear straight from the programmer himself, you know, how these effects were created. I always love hearing, you know, stories like this when people figure out neat ways to do things. So, this is just a little something from Coding Secrets. Did you get a chance to watch this one, Aaron?
No, I haven't seen this. I'm going to check it out, though. It looks good. I wasn't as big a fan of Leander as you were, but it's still interesting.
Well, I wasn't that big of a fan of Leander either.
Yeah,
so.
It's interesting to see how these techniques were done, and it's especially from a guy that went on to have such major success, so I'll definitely check that out. That's a good find, Boaster.
And I'll tell you something interesting is that the coders for Shadow of the Beast came to him and asked him how he got this sprite to look as good as it did, and they ended up using the same trick on Shadow of the Beast 3.
There you go. I'm sure a lot of this stuff gets passed around as long as they don't mind sharing their secrets, because you almost have to share them. If you know, we don't have to. You can keep them to yourself, but someone will probably figure them out eventually. But it's still neat that, again, this is stuff that's probably well over my head as well, but it'll be interesting to have a look at.
Yeah. Now, our next story, Aaron, we've talked about this several times, and the news just keeps on coming with this game. This may be my most hotly anticipated game of this year, in this year of the arcade port to the Amiga. The Kung Fu Remaster has now evolved into a totally new separate game, Aaron, and this game is called Devil's Temple, Son of the Kung Fu Master. Indie Retro News is reporting on this. Graham Cowie and Tenshu and DJ MeToon's upcoming Amiga conversion of Kung Fu Master is now basically going to morph into a brand new game. And this is, you know, what they're doing is they're taking the original Kung Fu Master and expanding it and making it so much more awesome. There's going to be weapon pickups, additional moves, and of course, the gorgeous, gorgeous graphics on the best chipset, the OCS-ECS chipset. None of this AGA nonsense. I am super looking forward to this game, Aaron.
So, well, this, I mean, with he gave very little brief, the briefest of shots of the actual game.
Yeah, it's a lot of loading and then like 2.57 seconds.
I will say the opening screen is awesome.
Yeah.
The Bruce Lee looking guy. So are they not going to do the Kung Fu conversion?
Is that what they've done is I think they started out just wanting to do a straight port and they're like, hey, why don't we just make a new game? So, I'm a big fan.
Might be good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, you know, it seems like we're sort of drowning in beat-em-ups and moving around in the 3D plane. I'd like to see somebody take the moving in a straight line, Kung Fu Master style, and, you know, add some interesting things to it. It's nice to have variety, you know, and this is definitely a more, it's not as an evolved engine as something like, oh, I can't remember the name of the new OCS ECS game that's coming out that's sort of like a Final Fight. You know what I'm talking about? Remember talking about that?
Oh, yeah. I remember
so
that.
This is, of course, is an earlier style of game, but I think that it's good to have some variety, and I can't wait to see what they come up with.
This looks really, I will say it looks colorful and fun just by looking at this video here. So I will give them that. And if they can make a game, if they can get the game right, they might have something fun here. I will say that's exciting news, Boat.
Now this next story, it speaks to my heart, Aaron, and it's great because it's coming out around Halloween time. Well, at least this story is. This is also from Neil over at Indie Retro News. Creeping Me Out Hex Knight is the name of a new Amiga platformer game from Mixel. Now, Aaron, if you watch some of this footage, it may remind you of another platformer on the Amiga. Does it strike you as being similar to anything else you've played before?
That part there looks a smidge Lionhearty.
I'm going to go with an actual good game. I'm going to say it looks a lot like the Addams Family because there's skulls rolling around. You are a guy that's sort of in a suit, and so I am hopeful that this will be the Addams Family successor that I've been waiting for all of these years.
Listen, to me, it looks a little more Lionhearty. Maybe this could be the ultimate, the thing that brings us together in Harmony Boat, some sort of Addams Family Lionheart hybrid.
I'm gonna quote directly from Indie Retro News, and Neil writes, "Creeping Me Out Hex Knight will not only have hints of Turrican and a bit of Castlevania, but will also feel like an Addams Family game containing more story elements than the average Amiga platformer."
It looks these shots look awesome. Did you see this boss fight here?
Yeah.
This looks great.
Super cool.
Yes. These games are looking good. These new Amiga games. Yeah. Holy smokes.
these are, and there is a demo that's available now. You can download it and check it out. I'll probably give that a shot here this week. But Creeping Me Out Hex Knight. Sort of a weird long name, but hopefully a good game.
This makes me happy. We hoped for a long time to get this kind of action, and now we're getting this kind of action. It's very exciting.
That's right. I think the years of the real Bruce Lee, maybe we're leaving those in the rearview mirror. thank goodness. True. All right, Aaron. And a final story this week comes from Vintage is the New Old. So these guys cover all kinds of new retro stories. And this is probably one of these once in a lifetime type projects that almost everyone undertakes at some point in their life. And that means somebody streams a program along version of an Italian programming manual translated into English on the fly. Who among us, Aaron, hasn't done that once or twice? So this is based, and of course, this comes from Phase 101, who I believe is the mind behind Vintage is the New Old. When he started out in programming, he got a book by a guy named Fabio Cucci, and it was called The Complete Course in Programming Assembly on Two Discs. This came out sometime between 94 and 96, and all it is text files, Aaron. So this was not available in book format. It was just text files, an early ebook, if you will. So Anyway, what this guy has done, Phase 101, he's decided to make this available in English for the first time by working through all of the exercises and talking about the book in a series of videos in English and putting those out on YouTube. How crazy is that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you can check this out. There's a link here from the Vintage is the New Old story. So far, he's done 18 of these episodes. Okay, so this is a huge book. The book is almost 2,000 pages long. And so it says that there are 38 episodes of the series in both Italian and English. He basically starts out streaming them, and then he uploads them to YouTube. So the first episodes of the series, the first 18 episodes are available on YouTube, and the following 20, I guess, are going to be coming soon. This is a mammoth undertaking, Aaron, but if you're interested in coding for the 68000 in assembly on your Amiga, this may be a good way to do it, where you kind of have a teacher there that's kind of working through a book with you, giving you lots of examples and tips and things like that. So I support Phase 101 and his endeavors, and I wish him the best of luck on this last 20 episodes.
Yeah, congrats. And I will say, gutsy, you mentioned, this is no easy task. You gonna try to learn you some of this, Boat?
No. There's nothing more
tricks, right?
There's nothing more scary than assembly language, Aaron.
I would just reap the benefits of others partaking in this sort of thing.
My whole life is based on, you know, gorging myself on others' hard work.
That's so, where we agree, Boat.
that's going to bring an end to the news for this week, but we should take a second and talk a little bit about Retro Rewind. Aaron, what's new with Frank over there at retrorewind.ca?
Well, Frank is up to his usual tricks, Boatster. Frank at Retro Rewind is the name you need to know for all your Commodore needs. Do you need a cap kit for your Commodore? Hey, listen, it's been in the news a lot here recently. I keep seeing pictures of people's classic computers having a big burn spot where those caps leaked all that juice out, and it went and corroded and destroyed those motherboards. Don't let it happen to you. Don't be that guy. It's an easy task to knock these caps out. Frank will set you up with the caps. And hey, listen, not everyone's good with the iron, or not everyone has the time to go in there and fool with that stuff. And if you're one of those people, Retro Rewind's got you covered there too, because he will do complete recaps for pretty much all the Commodore machines, everything from the CDTV all the way to the CD32, everything in between. You could also check him out for your Commodore 64s. All the Commodore machines will be covered over at RetroRewind.ca. He gives you very competitive rates and with a great selection. You need new OS ROMs for your Amiga, he's got you covered. You need chips, sockets, CPU relocators, he's got you covered. If you need carts, he's got you covered. He's a one-stop shop for all your Commodore needs. That's RetroRewind.ca, Boat.
Absolutely. And we appreciate Frank and the crew for doing such good work for the community. And we thank him for being a sponsor of Amigos.
Right on.
Aaron, let's get this spooktacular started.
All right. So, Boat, we were tasked this week with looking at two different games, Boatster. And so I thought we'd just do these suckers one at a time, my friend. And the first out of the gate, Boat, is a little thing I like to call the Blood Fest.
Holy
smokes. The Blood Fest, Boat. So, this was released in 1995 on a disc and developed by an outfit hilariously called Mellow Chips. Mellow
Weird name.
Chips. Now, I did a little research into Mellow Chips. As far as I could tell, they were a Finnish demo crew that was active in the late 90s, 95, 96, 99. I found seven members that were, including a guy named Dim, Divine, Dos, Jess, Ping, Vinny, Mix, Rise, and Severed. These were your crew. Mm. And they they programmed this game in Amos. This was coded by, I'm going to try to not butcher these, both, Petri Hakkinen, who did a couple games on the Amiga, Phoenix Fighters, and Puckman Worlds. These look like these are both sort of like PD style games. The graphics were done by someone called Tomas Jornfot, and the sound effects were put down by Jaco Carolila and Petre Hakkinen again, and the music was Mikko Kalnin. I like to just, you know, normally I don't say all the people that worked on the game, but I want to challenge myself. Both
that's
to
good.
Say these,
that's good. We need to have Lobsterminator come on here and
I'm sure there are a bunch of Finnish people punching the wall right now as I go through those. So, what do we got here, Boat? What we've got here, it's your Boat. If they said, listen, we need a game to appeal to John Boat of Car Schaller. Okay. So, what do we need in this game? Well, how about a step by step first person dungeon crawl? And let's make it excessively gory and violent. And lo, it came to pass, Boat. This game was custom built to incur your wrath, my friend. And I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on it. I want to just I'll go ahead and give a little backstory here. So, from the flavor text that you get at the beginning of this game, you awake from hypersleep aboard a space station. The whole crew has been turned into horrifying, deformed monsters. That's a fact. This game is inspired by Doom. It clearly was. And if you watch the flavor text at the beginning of this game, that's pretty much what it says. Something happened to this ship, and you were knocked out. And when you woke up, and by the way, you were in trouble when you were knocked out. You were in trouble for being a very, very violent crew member. So it's hilarious that you're the last one standing as you have to go after these zombies and monsters. This is sort of your classic step-by-step, like I said, first-person 3D. They call it, a lot of people would call this an RPG game. I wouldn't. I would just call it a step-by-step, I don't know, sort of like an action game, I guess.
I don't think anybody would call this an RPG.
Well, some people would. You can go through these halls one step at a time. Your controls, you can use the keyboard or the mouse to use arrows on the screen and to move left, right, up, down, and spin, in place. You've got a health bar. You've got a picture of your guy's face that gets nastier as you get more mauled. You can have multiple weapons in this. You start out with a dagger, and you go through the halls of this place and kill everything you see, trying to avoid certain traps and whatnot, and also find various accesses to doors. One of the aspects of this game that's sort of unusual, sort of an alien breed spin on it, Boat, was computer terminals that you can access that will kind of give you some flavor text, fill in what's going on in the game. What were your initial thoughts on this bad boy, Boat, when it came up?
Well, anybody that's listened to this show for any length of time knows that this is not my favorite genre. In fact, it's my least favorite genre. Of all the different video games out there, the first-person dungeon crawler, the step-by-step genre is, to me, just the least amount of fun you can possibly have sitting in front of a computer. That said, I think that this game offers a lot. You know, it offers a story. You know, is it the most original story that's ever been told? No, but it does give you a sense of like, okay, this is what's happened. This is what I'm doing here. It doesn't just drop you and say, hey, you know, time to go crawl around in this dungeon. Any button where you start off and one of your buttons is labeled stab, that's okay with me. I like that. As you say, you start off with a knife, and your attack button is always based on the verb that you're using. So if you've got a gun, it changes to fire, but you start off with that knife. The game's graphics are good. You know, they are I'd say above average for the genre. The enemies are not really animated as much as it's sort of a one frame thing as they move around, but the enemies themselves are well drawn. There is a variety of enemies as you progress through the levels. They do explode in a satisfyingly bloody way that you'd expect from a horror game like this. I thought that the way that you go about and, you know, you're searching, what I found to be the case is that you find most of your objects in beds. key cards, weapons, you know, every different sorts of things. I guess everybody just hides everything under their mattress in this game. But you also have to search the exploded corpses of the enemies to find items, too.
You get a lot of stuff off those. And off, or dead people that were dead when you got there, too, will have sometimes have stuff
on them. Right. So, I mean, on the whole, you know, as I played through this game, I realized the secret to dungeon crawlers is that if you hug the wall, like if you just pick a side, like if you hug the right wall and just follow that wall, you won't get lost. This was sort of a revelation to me because I was always getting lost playing these games. And I was like, listen, if I just hug the wall, I'm going to eventually get to a place that I haven't been to before. Now, is that fun? No, it's just another example of why this is a horrible genre. Any game that forces you to hug the wall just so you can progress through the levels is no good. That sucks. It's no fun. But that's what you've got to do. For fans of this genre, I mean, honestly, I had more fun with this game than I did Black Dawn Rebirth. I think this is a better game than Black Dawn Rebirth. I was able to understand more about what was going on. I thought the graphics were better, and I was able to progress further in the game than I was on that game. They're very, very similar games. It's just it's the same old story. It's the old mutants on the spacecraft, you know, that old saw. But this is a PD game. Some guys in the Finnish demo scene put this together faux free in their spare time, and they didn't charge anybody for it. These guys are a class act, and this game is a good game. I say that. Not the fact that I enjoyed it, because I don't like this kind of game. But if you have any interest in dungeon crawlers at all, I would highly recommend that you try this thing out. I think you'll like it.
Wow. I got to say, I'm surprised at the non-burial there of this game. You know, I thought this game was actually pretty good, too. I mean, I'll think of this genre of games. It runs smoothly. I got lost all the time. I did not hug the wall. So somewhere around here, I've got a napkin that I tried to map with. I used a napkin and a crayon, because that's how we do it. And I mapped my way through it. I also, of course, I don't know if you did this, but you could also, you know, there's one right fairly early in the game, there's a pit. You could careen into the pit and you'll land at least one floor down, maybe several floors down. That's when you get to fight the real weird stuff. That was revelation.
You know, and another thing that's great about this, and it doesn't really make sense if you think about it, but every floor of the spaceship is totally different. Like, it's like they hired a different interior designer for all of the floors. Because on the first floor, you've got what looks to be like dungeon walls. They're like block walls, and they've got this weird green ivy growing on them, like you're over at Wrigley Field. So, and then on the second floor, you've got more metallic walls. And it's nice, though, because again, what do you want out of video games? You want variety. You know, part of the reason why I don't like this genre is because when you've got to traverse the 27 levels of the Dungeon of Vermouth to get to the amulet at the bottom, and all 27 levels look exactly the same, that's no good. So another plus on the side of this is that you get variety in both the enemies and the actual, you know, externals of the levels themselves.
You know, Doug in the chat just had a good one. He says it's the International Space Station. Different countries made the modules for it. That makes sense.
That's a good point, Doug.
He just
good
made point. That up, but still, that's funny. good one, Doug. Listen, this game is above average for a PD game. If you like this sort of game, there's not a darn thing wrong with it. You can roll through. The controls are fine. Like you said, the stab button. It's got real-time combat. It's not turn-based, so be prepared to start stabbing. And you can get a long line. It's like a conga line of death in some areas where they just line up for you to kill them. But you can do it. I stabbed a lot of stuff until I got a gun. But I thought it was a pretty decent game. I will say there's a creepy ambience. They got the sound down.
Yeah, I thought the sound design was good. I appreciate the fact that you can move around with the keyboard as well as the mouse.
Yeah.
Some of these games, they make you use the mouse. You can really negotiate yourself pretty well using the arrow keys. One thing that's kind of neat about the final level of this, you get to the boss, you beat the boss, you get into an empty escape pod, and you blast off and you go back to your home planet. you land on your home planet and you realize that it has been totally destroyed by some sort of, you know, nuclear blast or something. And then this is text, and the text says, and there's these two guys, they start coming at you. They don't look friendly. And then the last screen of the game is you running away from these guys, and it's like to be continued. So they set you up for a sequel. I don't think the sequel ever got made, but it's like, again, we play so many commercially released games. Spoiler alert, the next game we're about to play, they give you no ending whatsoever. These guys not only give you an ending, but they also set up a possible sequel.
Yeah, I will say, we'll get to that. But I thought this was okay. You know, again, is it one I would go back to? We haven't touched on the incredible amount of violence in this game. Of course, it's a blood-based game, right? And so, you know when you get a game called Bloodfest, there's going to be some blood. And like
there's going to be blood.
When you kill a sucker, I mean, he explodes in the intro, a big pile of crud. And when you get killed, they just show your severed head with the eye popped out, blood coming out the head stump, you know, or I guess otherwise known as your neck. Head stump.
I like head stump. That.
And so it's all gory and disgusting. You know, it's funny that an outfit called the Mellow Chips would be so totally unmellow when it comes to the actual game. This is not something you sit down with a cup of Earl Grey and listen to some classical music while you go through it. This is something you put the Motorhead on for. But yeah, as far as PD games go, I thought this thing was not too shab. I mean, I'd say standard fare with a little bit better. How about that, Boat?
I think as PD games go, this is at the top of the heap.
Right.
I mean, is PD games in general, this could this could easily have been a commercially released game.
Yeah.
Without question.
Lemon, I checked out to see if I could get a score for this thing, and Lemon's the only place I could find that had a score. They gave this the viewers at Lemon gave it a 7.39.
That's incredibly low. Incredibly low.
7.39 is pretty good, I thought, Boat.
No.
You're nuts. Did we get any Discord action on this?
Oh, yeah, we did. Am I looking at it right now? No, because I'm too thoroughly entranced by the gameplay footage.
Well, I know that you are violence is abhorrent to you. So that when you see all these corpses and stuff, there's a sanity loss involved.
There is. I'm getting all Cthulhu'd up here. Alien Breeder writes, for a PD game, this was excellent. A gory dungeon crawler that looks great, moves quickly, is enjoyable to play, and does not take itself too seriously. The sound effects are crazy, but appropriate in an over-the-top way. For a PD game, I give this a 9 out of 10. Oh, Aaron, I should mention one major knock against this game is that the English, and I realize these are Finnish guys, so I'm going to give them a break. But the English, they definitely did not run this through a spell checker and or someone that speaks English natively. So, yeah, it might be a plus. You might be right.
Because when I was reading the stuff on the terminals, they would say stuff that I would be cackling with laughter. It was unintentionally funny. Yeah, Japanese get a lot of that, but, hey, the Europeans can do it too.
I take it back. It probably does work out to be a plus.
Yes.
And that's going to do it for the Bloodfest reviews. We got more reviews for the second game than the first game.
Well, let's head right on over, Boat, to... Okay. Game number two, because you know when we do a Halloween show, you don't just get one Halloween game, you gotta get two. We need a backup game because the first one sucks. And this time out, bam, the hilariously titled Horror Zombies from the Crypt, Boat. I think I saw this on Mystery Science Theater one time, man.
It definitely sounds like a movie that would be on there.
This is a commercial release, we should mention, from which, believe it or not, I was surprised when I read that. From 1991, one disc published by Millennium, which they'd published all the James Pond games that have been developed by Astral. Astral has three or four games for the Amiga, including Archipelago, Hover Force, which I believe I've played Hover Force, Quadrillion, and Resolution 101. The coder on this was a fellow named Stuart Gregg. I've played his other offering on the Amiga, a little something called Outrun Europa. And let me tell you something. I needed Europa to hang myself after playing that. That was horrible. the graphics were done by Jason Wilson. He actually worked on a lot of big games, including Diggers, Laser Squad, Motorhead, Pac-Mania, Shadow Warrior, HeroQuest. He did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And the music, Charles Calais. He did Action Service, Bargon Quest, Draken, Goblins, Populous 2. So he did some North and South. He did a lot of pretty big games. This ECS, OCS game, and was also ported over to the Atari ST and DOS Royale. When I say ported, no one's for sure what the lead platform was on this game. So I don't think it matters that much in this particular case. So this game is a whole different kettle of fish here. The game starts out in a theater like you're watching a horror movie, complete with the curtain drawn back. The whole narrative, a pretty clever opening, I thought, Bode.
Have you ever been to a movie theater that actually had the curtain and everything like that?
I have, yeah. And Kentucky Theater's got it. And when I was a kid, a lot of theaters had the curtain. It was sort of, when I was a kid, that was sort of part of going to the movies. I think they just got rid of those. I mean, I don't know if it served any purpose. It was just in front of the screen. It's not like, you know, at a theater where there's a stage and whatnot.
Right.
So in this game, the player takes on the role of Count Frederick Vladimir, and you enter a mansion full of creatures, and the creatures are trying to stop you from getting through all the levels. The game is a, I guess we'd call it a platform puzzler, would be the best way to describe this game.
Yeah.
And one of the things
I call it an action platformer with light puzzle elements.
There you go. You're the category master, Boat. this game starts off with an awesome tune. Guess what? They didn't write it. You probably picked it out right away, Boat. Do you remember what it was?
This is the Prokofiev from Romeo and Juliet. It's the March of the Capulets or something like that.
By the way, what was that? What is that word you used?
Prokofiev, that's the guy that composed it.
Oh, I see. There you go. So, yeah, it was from Romeo and Juliet. Montagues and Capulets that plays, and it occasionally will fire up during ba-dum, the game.
Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
I don't know why more games don't do that. Just go find some like basically free to use music.
Well, because it's not free to use because you have to pay somebody to code it into the tracker.
I bet you go find a band that performed it in like 1812 and then you use their copy.
But you've still got to find somebody to program it into the tracker.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know what I mean? They had a guy to do that. He didn't have to write anything is my point. Anyway, it worked out good. I like the old classical music bit, Boat.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the gameplay in this thing, Boatster. Again, a puzzle platformer here where you run through a mansion. So, again, this is another sort of an Adams Family style game, just exactly like Adams Family, Boat. In every
way. Exactly like it.
You'll notice right away that your guy is what I would like to call gravity defying but slow. Basically, it's like you're on the moon, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You'll know this game doesn't hold your hand. The very first scene, you don't have any weapon. And you've got to figure out what's happening. I know I died a couple times before I figured out you could go pick up a dagger. And then you start off. This is a game that flows along a platform. And basically, it's a scrolling game, but you're only scrolling through a few screens, and then you go to another set of screens. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of like a single-screen platform, except this is like a scrolling screen, single-screen platform. What's the word for that, Boat? You have one for that one?
Well, I mean, it's like a lot of games. A lot of games are like this.
They're basically, you know, it's not any one game long that rolling you're, level.
Yeah, you're right. Any game that it does sort of fall between it falls between the two genres, I would say.
Yeah, I like it though. I kind of like that.
In a way, again, it's like the Addams Family because you're negotiating. Any game where you're in a mansion, you're going to be moving out of in and out of rooms. But these are very, very short, if you want to call them levels.
Yeah.
But they're really not, though, because the game does have discrete levels. So.
Yeah, but I thought it was a neat way to do it. Yeah,
it is a neat way to do it.
It reminded me.
I'll tell you, actually, before I forget, it reminded me of Batman the Caped Crusader on the ZX Spectrum.
Yes. Yeah, I would buy that. I mean, it reminds me of a ZX Spectrum game that just had, but the screens would just scroll an extra couple screens, you know, but the ones that had the individual rooms. So one thing you'll learn about in this game is that your character, aside from the fact that he's slow and jumps like he's on the moon, he does have a couple cool moves. If you pick up weapons, you can throw them, knives and whatnot. But he's also got my personal favorite thing in a game, the old sneak button.
Yeah, the old sneaky boots.
And then of course, I didn't know about it early on, so I would just repeatedly get killed. And I had to go to a playthrough. It's like, how are they doing this? And I saw the guy start sneaking. I'm like, well, how do I do that? And I had to look up the docs and figure the whole thing out. When you push the space bar, it starts the sneak timer. And then the sneak timer will run out as you sneak. But the funny thing is, your character gets in the classic, like, Scooby and the Gang sneak pose.
Yep.
And sneaks along. But you have to use this because he can sneak past things looking right at him. But if he tries to run past stuff looking right at him, they'll kill him.
Everybody knows that when you get into the sneak pose, you become invisible.
You know, I do love every in all media when they assume the sneak pose. I'm instantly amused by that. So, Bo, what were your initial thoughts on this one? This is a strange egg here, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I kind of had to keep looking back at the date that this was released to try and form an opinion of it, because by 91 standards, I would say this game is pretty weak graphically. But by Amiga platformer standards, I'd say it's pretty strong.
Oh, here we go.
This is a game that if you had played anything, I mean, 91, we're past the release of Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, we're past the release of Super Mario World. This is pretty weak sauce. But if you weren't living in that world at the time, then this could be pretty good. What you've got here is the old classic 8-bit mechanics, 8-bit level design, with slightly maybe 20% up-res graphics, and boom, you've got a 16-bit game. That's what you've got. So if you're looking for a game that looks slightly better than a Commodore 64 game and moves slightly faster, then Horror Zombies from the Crypt is going to be right up your alley. Right off the bat, I thought this game... I was impressed in a way because I was expecting it to be a run-of-the-mill platforming game where you essentially, you know, just move through the levels and you kill things and eventually you get to the end of the level. But I was pleasantly surprised by the puzzle elements of it. For example, like pretty early on, you're in a room and you can't reach this high object and you've got to push a table in front of the, to get to it. This is not what you call a real mind-bending puzzle. But right. The fact that you can interact with elements in the background to do various things is cool. My initial impressions of this game were, doesn't look especially great. It looks like an up-res 8-bit game and plays like one, but there might be something here because of the extra added puzzle elements.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. You know, I'll say I like the idea of playing through a 50s horror film, all right? But the funny thing is, they don't really embrace that very much after the opening. You know, and since the name of the game is what it is, and they made it look like a movie poster, and they made it open in a theater, it would have been, you could have taken that idea and made it a lot of fun. You know what I mean? But once they get past that, they don't do anything with it, which is disappointing.
Well, I mean, in a way they do. I will say this, also in this game's favor, because this is one of my main complaints about so many games that we play on this show, is that they front load the story. They give you about 9 minutes of introductory text and images, and then once you start the game, you get no more story. In this game, whenever you do beat a level, you do get more of the story, you know, like you have to go to the bell tower and then you ring the bell and then the next story. And so it is like you're watching a movie. I don't find fault. I think that they did a pretty okay job of keeping the story elements intact. I mean, they never flash back. It would have been cool when they to flash back to the theater to show people, you know,
that's
that sort
I
of thing.
Mean.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, they should have done
that.
Or
even when you die, someone in the theater gasps or something like that. Or maybe the poster changes into like a failure of a lifetime or something really scary. Yeah, they could have done some fun stuff they didn't do.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
Now, the puzzle elements in this I liked. I mean, they actually get kind of tricky as you go through it. But the problem is, this is another game. We played a game with this a couple weeks ago where they were on the cusp of something, but it's too cheap. This game is super cheap. It's another Dragon's Lair style game where you just go through it.
It's trial by death.
As you're walking, stuff spikes just come out. Like, out of nowhere. Or a guy just appears. Crap like that. And so you're guaranteed to die the first time.
Yeah, and this is, we should mention now, this is a one-hit kill game.
Yeah.
Not for the enemies. The enemies takes 4 or 5 shots to kill them. But you, anytime that you come into contact with anything that is not stationary, you will die. And you die spectacularly. Your head, you scream, your head explodes, and your body collapses into a state of guts.
Which is pointless. And the thing is, you can that happens every time.
Right.
And sometimes you'll get touched by a rat in the foot, and that happens.
Right. So and this is This is the sort of thing that they really screwed up. Because what you have is a pretty cool death animation, but when it's used every single time you die, it loses all of its effect.
Yeah, and also it's just, I mean, what's the, I know that doesn't make any sense to me that they even put something that gruesome in there. Yeah. I guess they were
it really doesn't. This game is supposed to be, at least if you look at the way that it's marketed, you look at the opening scene, it's supposed to be kind of schlock, you know, B movie sci-fi or horror type thing. And I agree with you. The death is too gruesome to fit that theme.
It was out of place. Like it would, a much better death would have been like spinning around the circle and the flower popping up or something. You know, like more of a kind of a wacky death. Yeah. You know, I mean, this game really, I will say of the two, I like this one more than I did the first one, but I don't necessarily think this is a better game. It's just more in my line of gameplay, you know, but I mean, there are a lot of elements this game I like. I like the structure of the game. I like the fact that it's split into six levels. I like it's got a password system, and so you can start on the levels, which is fine. And I like the puzzle elements. There's light inventory elements. You know, there you'll get like special shoes. At one point, you can get this potion that makes you look like a zombie, so you can go places you couldn't normally go.
Now, here's the problem with that. They never. Okay. Let's back up. I was not able to find any documentation for this game whatsoever, and I looked.
I found a handwritten text file with the keyboard commands. That's what I found.
And so I don't know if this stuff was explained in the manual, but like the part of the game where you have to transform into a zombie, they never, like, nothing about the game changes. Like, you can kill zombies all day long with your knife, and then all of a sudden you get to a point in the game where you can no longer kill zombies with your knife, and you have to drink the elixir and transform into a zombie to get through it. But nothing is explained about why this section of the game is different, and that's really poor game design.
Well, I mean, there's a section early on where you have to sneak in front of these killer statues and the floor breaks.
Also not explained.
Like, who
also
would do that?
Explained.
You know, I would never even think to do that. I mean, we're not going to sit here, and this game's not going to win any awards for level design or accessibility, okay?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it could have been a contender.
What this is an incredibly half-baked effort. Because how many times have we said this? All of the bones of a good game are here.
Yeah.
They've got interesting, colorful enemies that fit the theme of the game. You've got, four different items that you can choose from that you can do presumably interesting things for. You're collecting various things. You're collecting skulls. You're getting keys to open doors. You're getting keys to open chests. All of the things that you want out of a game like this are present. But for whatever reason, maybe it was rushed out the door, we should take the moment to mention that this game is actually unbeatable if you play it in its original form. There is a bug in the game that to progress through the levels, you have to collect a certain number of skulls. There's a bug in the fifth level that actually makes it impossible to collect all of the skulls. So you have to type in the password for the sixth level. By itself is no good.
One thing I read is that you could complete this game, but only if you have the hacked pirate version. Because the pirates went in there and fixed the missing skull, apparently. Mm. I read that, but I did read about the missing skull. Yeah, that's and the ending of this game is there isn't one. It just stops, basically.
Yeah.
It's half-baked, I'd say. The ending of it gets pretty hard. It's not the easiest game, but, I mean, it's not the hardest on the Amiga. You can get through it. I will say the hit detection is spotty. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
These are the fundamental parts that they botched. It's not a good game. How about that?
And you are going to get real sick. Listen, Prokofiev, what's he most famous for?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, he's most famous for Peter and the Wolf, which is one of the best pieces of music ever written. Dun, dun, da, 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 da. There's like eight different parts. You know, this is what they always play for kids when they do the introduction to the symphony, because all of the different animals are featured in all the different songs. If they wanted to go that route, they should have just done all Prokofiev and put in different songs from Peter and the Wolf or something besides that same song over and over and over again. Listen, I am a fan of classical music, but I turned this bad boy off and I went straight sound effects after a little bit, because the sound effects are goofy, but at least it wasn't just that same song over and over again.
I hope you like Howling Wolves, because you're
gonna you get a lot of Howling Wolf, and not the good Howling Wolf, not the blues singer.
No, I turned off the music instantly. I didn't listen to it. I listened to the opening and then I turned it off because I had a feeling it was gonna be the old rinse and repeat special. this is a game. It's good for a laugh. It's kind of fun. You may find some enjoyment in it, but ultimately, they didn't get the job done. Ball dropped, boat. The people over at Lemon weren't quite as kind to this one. They gave this thing a 6. This game actually, of course, got released, and we'll look at the Atari or the DOS version in a second. The Amiga Action gave us an 86. Amiga Format gave it a 71. Amiga Joker wasn't buying what they were selling. 48%, brother. Amiga Mania, brother. 56%. Amiga Power, 32.
Wow.
AUI, 56. Dator Magazine, believe it or not, 9 out of 10. They loved it. The One gave it a 55. Total average magazine score over at Lemon, 59%. I mentioned this was released for the Amiga, the Atari ST, and DOS. Just for fun, I grabbed the DOS version and did a little comparison here. And I'll have to say, having watched and listened to the both versions, the DOS version probably plays a little quicker. You can see the guy's moving a little bit quicker. But of course,
it's also that the resolution is higher in the DOS version, too. It looks like there's more colors.
When you look at DOS stuff, you never know what they're playing with either. So to say it's quicker, it might have been quicker, depending on maybe someone has a souped-up PC. But, I mean, if you're going to play this now, I don't play it now. You know, I wouldn't bother. I did look at the Atari ST version, and it looked very similar to the Amiga. So there you go. Did you get any action on the old Discord boat?
We did. We got several reviews on the old Discord for Horror Zombies from the Crypt. I think this was one that was more played back in the day. Alien Breeder said, "It didn't sound familiar until I opened it up, and then I remembered. This game is not great. It's a bit Castlevania mixed with Yojo with none of the charm. Graphically, it's a mess. The main character looks weird and moves like he's doing a strange dance. The music is okay, but the sound effects do not add to the mood of the game. Overall, a strange 5 out of 10. Sky76 writes, "The theme of Dance of the Nights from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet and the cartoonish intro sequence promise more than the game is able to deliver. Sound effects are mediocre, which is a shame because they could have added much more atmosphere to the game. There are many hidden doors with bonus items like the tiptoe boots, etc. This could have been an above-average platformer, but some difficult parts and repetitive gameplay made me not want to play this game very often. Animations are gory and funny, plus you can enter passwords to start in later levels. I'll give this 5 out of 10 zombie bites."
Yeah.
And finally, Pajaco6502 writes, "A fantastic B-movie-style game with comic gore. There's a little too much trial by death, and sometimes it's tough to know what to do next, but it's fun enough anyway. Certainly a game where having multiple button controller would be great. Looking for a fun horror game for an evening? Then check this out, 7 out of 10. I think I would probably go a little bit higher than the average magazine review. I would probably say this is a 7 out of 10. I did have some fun playing this game, and I did stick with it longer than probably I should have, because I was able to make progress, and I was able to constantly save scum to keep me from getting frustrated. You know, whenever I would get to I would go in through a door, I would save. Whenever I would beat a hard part, I would save. And that helped me progress. If I was playing this au natural with an original
Amiga,
that's
what I did.
There's no way I would have been able to stick with this as long as I did.
I would give this a 6 just because of the many, many flaws and just to punish their laziness, frankly. But I mean, this is one of those games you can play it for a while, and if it tickles your fancy, I can see you stick with it a little bit longer. I looked it up on eBay, by the way, just to close out. Of course, the first game was free, and we did, so there was no eBay on it. But this one did have some eBay action recently. There were none for sale right now, but a couple of these sold in the UK recently for $31 and $55 US dollars, respectively. So this is demanding some sort of price. I would say mostly based on the cover art, which is awesome. I'm going to have the Brent print me up a poster of the cover art, because I like the cover art. The style of it's pretty clever. But that's probably that and the music, I would say, are the highlights of the game, Boats.
We should also mention that one of the items are crawling trousers.
Yeah, you got the boots, the trousers, the zombie
zombie elixir. Yeah. And then the cross is only used in the very final screen of the game. When you go through a door, if you do not have the cross selected, two of these ghosts will swoop down and kill you instantly. Yeah. I'm sure that that was fully explained in the documents.
How far did you get into this, Bo? Did you get to the point where you got...
I made it about midway through the second level. Yeah. And then it just got too hard, even with Scaves coming. And then I watched the rest of it on a long play.
Yeah, and there are cheats to give you infinite men. You know, but
yeah, I definitely used the cheat that gave me infinite men. I used a combo cheat, infinite men and saves coming.
There you go. Hey, if you can have infinite men, you got something good going on there. So there you go. Horror zombies from the crypt, boat.
Yeah. All right, Aaron, let's speaking of horror zombies from the crypt, what's been going on over the YouTube channel this week?
Well, way to sell it, boat. We've had an interesting week on the channel here. Let me look and see where we left off last week. So let's start with, I guess, we'll talk about myself and the Brent, as we always do, start off. We looked at horror games, 'Tis the Season, Boat, as you know. And I looked at a game called, what did I look at? I can't even remember. Oh, yeah, Nightmare Creatures. That would explain it. This game was sort of a dud, Boat, on the PlayStation. You could also play it on the N64. This was a highly touted 3D game, third-person sort of a Tomb Raider with a sword or a stick sort of a game. I remember wanting to play this back in the day on my PC. My PC was too slow, brother. And so I thought, heck, now's the time to try it. Well, not really. Especially when you consider we played it against Brent's game, Eternal Darkness, on the Nintendo GameCube. Holy smokes, what a game this was. Crushing my game. This is a great game that the Brent picked out. If you're into horror gaming... Or you want? I mean, this was the first game that Nintendo ever had an M rating on, Boat. Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't until I listened to the podcast. Yeah. I was not aware of that.
And Brent knows I thought,
well, what about Conker's Bad Fur Day? But then I realized that was actually published by Rare, I guess, and not Nintendo. Yeah. So there you go.
This is sort of the, I guess, and a lot of people know about this game. I didn't. Okay. I'll admit it. But this game should be more publicized, I think. This is quite a game. This is a deep thinker, Boat. I mean, this is not horror zombies in the crypt. I mean, this is like some real deep stuff, historical stuff, a lot of Cthulhu stuff, just really interesting. If you're going to do anything off ARG that you've seen anytime recently, I'd put this high on the list. And you know me, I'm not the biggest GameCube guy, but I call him like I see him. And also the fact that it never got ported anywhere, Boat. The system they've got of sanity loss, where it actually physically screws with you in real life, that's astounding. Yeah. When they put bugs on the screen or make it look like you're erasing your save games, I mean, that's crazy.
It's unfortunate. This is the same thing, and this is why people always say, well, why don't you ever see the things where you play little mini games during loading, like some of the PlayStation games? And it's the same reason, because the publisher patented that particular feature, and so you're not going to see that anywhere else. So yeah. It's a shame that that's the case.
It's crazy you can patent that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's bizarre. So anyway, there you go. ARG Presents. We'll be doing some LaserDisc games this week, Boat. So now we got to talk about this, Boat. Our good buddy Alan did us a solid, didn't he? Otherwise known as Happy Coding ZX. And he went and put me and Boat in Attic Attack. How do you pronounce this?
Attic Attack.
Yeah. Look, he made little Aaron and Boat in the game. Look at that, Boat.
I love it.
I tried playing this. I mean, it's still hard, but we like this game, and that was super nice of him to put those in.
Yeah,
man,
yeah. It's an incredibly surreal feeling to play yourself in a video game.
Yeah, it was great. You know, remember Gary James put a picture of us in a game when he did those.
That was on Killer Bees, I think, right?
Yeah, which was awesome. And now I never thought I'd be able to play myself in a game. And so it seems like, I mean, it's for me, I brought the Luke in here to show him. I talked to my mom. I was like, look, I'm in this game. I felt like a big man, Boat.
Yeah.
That was nice. So we want to thank you big time,
Thank you, Alan. And you can check out all of his work. He's done re-releases of Asteroids, Jetpack, tons of games over at highriser.itch.io.
Yeah. Great stuff. I will say his Asterisk we played quite a bit. Always is being improved by him as well. So
yeah,
there you go. Thank you very much, dude. We really appreciate that. Boat, we played Donut Dilemma on the last Coco show, and here you are going to work on this thing. we don't have to get into it too much, but this is a great game, isn't it, Boone?
Yeah, yeah. And this is one of the few times where I plugged it, you know, I was like, okay, I played it for one. I was like, I'm going to record some footage because there was no good footage of this game on YouTube. And so I started playing, and I had one of the best games of my life during the recording attempt. I zoomed through these first like four stages, no problem. So I was very happy with that.
Yeah, because normally you'll record some video for me and be like, here's the video. And I'll be like, man, you didn't get, I don't tell you this, but I'm like, man, you didn't get too far. And then I looked at this because I was like, I've already got this set up in the show. And I watched, I was like, well, heck, this is way better than what I got. Put it in, brother. And I put that sucker right in. So good job, Boat. But yeah, this is a great game from our buddy Nick. And that'll be on an upcoming Coco show. Let's talk about our good buddy, the Flaxter, the Jack Flaxter. He did a little thing called Sprite Castle this week, and he did it on the Munsters. Were you a Munsters fan back in the day, Boat?
Yeah, I was. I love the Munsters, and I think you've got Adams Family people, and you've got Munsters people.
Yeah.
And I was definitely a Munsters person. I love the fact that they were monsters and they looked weird, but they acted normal and people were freaked out by the way they looked, even though they tried to be friendly and nice. Yeah. It reminds me of myself a lot. People are freaked out by me, though I try and be friendly and nice.
Yeah, you freaked me out, Boat. I was a guy, I was an Adams Family guy, and I probably wasn't a huge fan of either show, but I did like characters off the show. And I will say in the Munsters, I like Grandpa was great. Grandpa mm-hmm. stuck around for a while. He would come. TBS would bring him back to host like crazy monster shows and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Commercials. And then I also liked Fred Gwynn, who played Herman. He was probably best known for Herman. He also was in Car 54, Where Are You? And he was also the judge. If you ever saw My Cousin Vinny, he had a funny turn as the judge with the classic line, "What's a Ute?" Now, that was him. But I know him best from his work on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. He was an excellent radio voice actor. He had that deep voice that was really cool.
He's got one of the all-time great voices.
Yeah. Pet Sematary. Thank you, Pajaka. He was also in that. So I like those individuals. But as a concept, the Munsters never did much for me. I was more of an Adams Family guy because I liked Gomez, and I thought Morticia was hot. I said it. So there you go. But Flack, I caught the end of this. Where he actually played some of it. And I will say, I listened to the entire show. It was great. It was a real good episode. And even not being a big Munsters fan, I really enjoyed it. So check out, as always, Sprite Castle with Jack Flack. That was a real... Did you get to hear that one, by the way?
Absolutely. I listened to every single episode. So it was... it's funny that, you know, Munsters is a game where you can only move and shoot. There's no jumping. There's no ducking. You're just... It's a stripped back experience.
Yeah. So... Flack also did a Sprite Castle's plays. Now, I did catch into this one, Boat, where he played the Briley Witch Chronicles. He played the Munsters, but he played the Briley Witch Chronicles. This is the much ballyhooed Sarah Jane Avery recent release on the 64.
You know, it's funny. Flack talked, he's like, she describes, I'm quoting Flack, she describes it as a JRPG, and it does look sort of like Link in Zelda. I wanted to throttle Flack through the stereo speakers on my car.
Why?
Because Zelda is not a JRPG, and it's not even an RPG. This is what you get when you get C64 people trying to act like they know what they're talking about when it comes to JRPGs.
I'm going with Flack on this one.
Get out of town.
Everyone knows Zelda's an RPG. We've already went down this road.
I'm going to throttle you.
I think we both know the answer, and both know I was right. Now listen, no one knows more about Zelda than me, brother. But anyways... I was watching Flack play this game because, I mean, everyone's talking about this game. And I'm not going to sit here and bury. I'm not going to bury this game, okay? Because, I mean, for the people that like this stuff, it must be great. But it was the goofiest. I was listening to him. Of course, Flack did all the voices, which was funny. But this game has got like 4 billion tons of dialogue. It's just sitting around reading. Get a book. You know what I mean? Good God. I mean, but if people love this stuff. I've heard more about this game than anything that's been released recently. People are tripping over themselves. Are you going to go get this one, Boat? You know, this crap.
I do love this crap, but I don't know if I love it anymore, though. That's the problem. Like, you know, Undertale.
You're getting out of RPGs?
Yeah. Like, Undertale is a game that I should have beaten a billion, billion times. It's got everything that I love. It's a JRPG. It's funny. It's got that 8-bit aesthetic. Have I played it? No. I think that it's just, this is a genre that was a part of my youth that just didn't make the transition into older Boat. I think that's what's happening.
They're a big time sink. You know, Tenmark just chimed in and said this was based on a book, which is true, but it's based on her book that she wrote. So it should be a pretty easy way to go. It's not like she's translating someone else's book here. Now, I've never read the book, you know, and I don't plan on it. I don't know it. It's not my bag. So, I mean, if you're into RPGs or what'd you say this thing was, Bo? Is this an RPG or not?
JRPG.
Is that what this is? Okay.
Yeah.
Is Sarah Jane Avery Japanese, Bo?
No.
Okay. So how is this a Japanese RPG? It's in the style of a Japanese RPG.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I won't be getting it. But hey, for $10, it seems like a pretty good deal. They say it's a huge game.
Yeah, there's tons of content. That is one thing that is undisputable. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it does look very good.
You know, so there you go. Again, maybe one of these days we'll look at this thing on one of these shows. I don't know. But hey, I like the last batch of C64 at Homebrew that I played. So I'm sure this is going to be good stuff if this is your bag, but it ain't mine. I will say I did enjoy it more with Flack than the crazy voices. Anyway, check out Flack. Everyone in there was ranting and raving about they want Flack to play this entire game with all his voices.
Oh, man. You know, if Sarah Jane Avery ever puts out a digital deluxe expanded edition with voice acting, she should just hire Flack to do all the voices.
If she wanted that game to get over from a comedy perspective, and I agree. if any part of her was, if she ever watched this video, she may come to get Flack with that dog. She may bring the dog. But otherwise, it was highly amusing. And then last but not least, Boatster, Boataroo. We've got our good pal, Frodo, this time out looking at the Neo Geo Advanced Entertainment System, the AES, on the Mister. Is this the first year it is?
I love that shirt. Look at that shirt that Frodo's got on. I think it's Charlie Brown and Snoopy.
E.T. Isn't that cute?
I love that.
That's great. Frodo's got great hair. You know, yeah, Frodo. He doesn't care.
He's a damn handsome man.
He is. And, well, I mean, listen, you can get away with blue hair and stuff if you can pull it off.
Yeah.
The first year Neo Geo, boy, I never really looked into Neo Geo on a year-by-year basis. You know what I'm saying? So this might be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had any big killer apps right out of the gate or not. Do you?
No. I'm sure that they had a bunch of killer duds as normal for, the first year of a system. So it should be interesting to look at.
Pretty good. I'm looking through I'm just quickly flipping.
I didn't even look at that. There's a boxing game. I had no idea there was a boxing game on Neo Geo.
Yeah, I remember some of this. The funny thing is I remember a lot of stuff from the arcade more than I do from the home. Of course, no one I knew had an AES. I wish, right? No one could afford one of those. Hey, did you and Neil get any action this week, Boat?
We did not record we did record it. I'm always forgetting we're a week behind on This Week in Retro. So if you look over at the This Week in Retro YouTube channel, we had a pretty good episode. We talked about... I'm trying to pull it up.
I watched this one actually. The old 6502 FPGA.
Yeah, the story of the week was, well, first of all, Scum is 20 years old. Are you a fan of Scum, Aaron?
I mean, I like some of the games. Listen, again, it's not necessarily my favorite, but I mean, I definitely appreciate the talent. Some of the games are pretty funny too. I'll give them that.
I'm a big point and click adventure guy. So that was definitely a big story for me. But the big story of the week was this new 6502 FPGA drop-in solution that is being developed. This thing, of course, you know, the 6502 originally debuted at around 1 megahertz. Well, just imagine the power, Aaron, of a 100 megahertz 6502. And what you end up with is a really fast processor, I guess.
You know, Neil brought up a point that this is my point for years. If you're going to do the same stuff you always do on these machines, then what difference does this make? It's not going to make the games any prettier or any more interesting. They're going to, I mean, for the most part, nothing will change, right? Unless you write software to utilize these. So,
well, I think it all comes down to, are you into playing games on your computer or are you an enthusiast, hardware guy? And I think that those are two different camps. And this is going to appeal to one of those camps more than the other camp, for sure.
Hardware's too hard. I used to be a hardware guy, but I'm telling you, Boat, I just want things to work without me having to do any actual under-the-hood action anymore. Yeah. But still, it's interesting that someone's taking the time to put this together. The FPGA has revolutionized little projects like that, hadn't it?
Yeah, well, what I'm envisioning is that, sooner or later, we're going to have FPGA chips for almost every chip, you know, every specialized chip. So we'll have a FPGA Paula, we'll have an FPGA, you know, whatever, Agnes, and then we can drop those in. And we won't have to worry in the future about, you know, these custom chips going away forever, and which is good. It's good for the future of the hobby.
Yeah, I agree. I want to touch it because I've had a lot of people ask me about this. You know, this has been the scary, scary month of October. We're rounding this sucker out, Boat. Mm-hmm. And this time next week, it'll be November. And we've been doing a little something on Friday nights called Conversations from the Dark Side, Boat. Oh, man. And so... we got a pretty good response. So what we've decided to do is literally I've made this thing its own channel and I've put all the episodes up there because they didn't really fit the format for the Amigos retro gaming channel. So we gave it its own channel. And so if you want to watch, we just did an episode last night, by the way, myself, Jack Flack, Cast of Thousands. And last night's was Ghost Stories and Halloween Traditions. So if you're into Conversations from the Dark Side, you can go to the channel on YouTube, Convos from the Dark Side, all one word, and that's where you will find all the episodes, and you'll find any future episodes there as well. We have the same channel on Twitter, Convos from the Dark, or Convos from the Dark Side, and the same channel on Twitch. So if you want to add us, and we will probably, it'll probably be early next year, but we'll probably do some more episodes of these, because we had a lot of fun doing these, didn't we, Boat?
Yeah. I was not able to make it last night because for the same reason we were not able to tape Amigos last night. My internet just refused to yield. And yeah. Actually, I guess it refused to do the opposite of yielding because it was definitely yielding last night.
Yeah. It's almost yielding now, but we're powering through here today.
Yeah,
thankfully.
We are.
Anytime it rains around here, Katie bar the door. So anyway, Conversation to the Dark Side. If you're into it, check it out. And hopefully in the future, that channel also has some other shows along that same genre, but that's a future gimmick that we have yet to fully figure out, but that will be coming. I think that's all we've got, Boat, on the video front, my friend.
All right, man. Well, it's time to talk about last week's Patreon song challenge. So we rounded out Smith Timber at the end of October. Took us a little longer than expected with our final song Ask. So if you are into college music from the 80s from England, I hope that you enjoyed Smith Timber.
And who isn't?
Yeah. The final song was Ask. Was a guest by an entirely British cast. Oh, no, I take it back. Eric Nelson got it. It was almost all Brits. Happy Coding ZX, Jigglebox. Actually, I don't know where Jigglebox is from. He might be Belgian. Paul Kitching, Ronnie Young. I can only guess. I think he's British. I think he's in the Rolling Stones. Mitsuyama and Eric Nelson. So congratulations to you guys. You got it right.
Good ear.
And of course, the June Bugs will roll on in the future with more great tunes. But this week, Aaron, the Patreon Song Challenge comes from the other Patreon band. And I'm happy to announce that the other Patreon band, just to avoid confusion, has renamed itself X-Copy.
Okay, good name.
Yeah, X-Copy. So get ready for X-Copy's debut performance on Amigos. This is this week's Patreon Song Challenge. If you know it, send me an email at john@amigospodcast.com. Please, if you're watching in the chat, do not reveal the answer in the chat. Send me an email instead, and I will announce you as the winner of next week's Patreon Song Challenge. Hit it, Aaron.
Mr. Chip, Peter Price, Herman B., one-week session. Mark Richardson, David Hunt, Chris Edwards, Ramo K, Ramo K, David, Terrence, Joe Carlos, Matthew Mobius, The Phantom Magnus, Seth Yates, Alistair Fink, Christian Russo, David Z, Joe Krasansky, Daniel Crabtree,
It.
Yeah.
I so loved it. Finally.
We want to thank all of XCopy. Picks on Vokes, Boss Man on the drums, Figgy on keys, Reffy on the guitar, the bass, and the sleigh bells. Of course, me playing the old uke. It was my first time really playing the uke, Aaron.
You were killing it, man. You were killing it. Maybe
best.
You missed your calling. You could have been like a Hawaiian lounge singer.
That's
something
true.
Like that.
That's true. So we want to thank also, Aaron, of course, in addition to our lovely Patreon subscribers, we want to thank our Twitch supporters. If you enjoy watching the show live on Friday nights or on Wednesdays, we're doing this on Wednesday this week, please consider subscribing to us, especially if you're an Amazon Prime customer. You get one free sub a month. It costs you nothing. It helps support us. We want to thank Picard 2010. Uber Scuba Diver, Blue Train, Bite Links, Edvin Helland, Barkbit, Real Retro Dude, Butterberg, Air Jury, Luminato 8, Scumboy, Mitsuyama, The Hawk Crabs, MTG, Retro Jerry, Frodo NL, Blow Jellyfish, Data Hombre, Super Tech Boy, Jigglebox, Eeyore 4077, Neg Sol, Trapshot Live, Gary Heather, Blip Blop, Great Owl G, Mr. Toast 6502, Orom, Aunt Jarvis, Pixels at Dawn Gaming, John Marshall 3, Texas Foosballer, Ben 666, Macintosh Librarian, Monza Mess, Explorer, Wild World of Retro, Jedi Mon, Captain Chaos DK, Still Adolescing, Paco Take, Pixel Rageous, Buck Owens, and Twilight Zoner. Thank you guys so much for supporting us on Twitch. All right, Aaron, next week on the show, we are going to be playing, well, we should probably talk about the way we're going to do high score challenges before I announce what's going on next week's show.
Okay.
So high score challenges are shifting focus from a monthly challenge to a weekly challenge, and it's going to be based on this week's game. So now, of course, Zombies from the Crypt, not really a high score game. But if you want to pop on there and just share your experiences of playing through it, you know, we welcome any of that stuff. And when we do get to a high score game, of course, we'll sort of morph into that. Next week's game, Aaron, we're going to be playing Metal Gear. Metal Gear, Aaron. Not the game that comes to mind when you start thinking about the Amiga. Of course, this is a port not of the well-known NES game, but the lesser-known MSX original, which is superior in almost every way. So,
yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to this because I've heard for years about that MSX, and I knew this got ported over, so this should be fun. Week, but I think I'm going to get it in right away. It'll be good.
So we are going to actually record Amigos on Wednesday. So if you're listening to this show the day that it appears, which it should come out today, then we are going to be back in action in just four short days, Wednesday, November 3rd, at the same normal time, 5:30-ish, we will be recording Metal Gear.
This is just a one shot.
Yeah. So, and the reason why is because we got a message from the Extra Life people saying there's a chance, just a chance, that we might be featured on the Twitch homepage during this time. And so, you know, fingers crossed, we'll get on there, maybe get some new viewers. And even if we don't, it'll still be a fun time. So come check us out if you're not doing anything on Wednesday evening. Now, Aaron, I know you've got some announcements.
Just a couple quickies, Boat, before we take to the house. Tonight, October 30th, the TeamSpeak Irregulars are having their Halloween Spooktacular. Everyone playing online games, the usuals, the regulars, will be there in costume mode playing all your horror favorites tonight. Dead by Daylight, Phantasma, Phobagoria, where they think that ghost hunting game is, Friday the 13th, all the scary stuff tonight. So we'll be kicking it off at 8 o'clock on Twitch on the TeamSpeak Irregulars channel on Twitch. That's the TeamSpeak Irregulars. And one more quick item just to get it out there. This coming November 26th, that's the day after Thanksgiving, myself and the Brent will be having the third annual Thanks for Giving Marathon starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to play, I don't know, 8-10 hours of games nonstop. Brent is putting together something so diabolical and crazy that I don't even know about it. But we're going to record out in the arcade, just like the old times. I'm going to drag out the green screen, the whole nine yards, boat. Should be a lot of fun. So that will take place on November 26th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Thanks for Giving Marathon. More details to follow, boat.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I think, as far as I'm aware, that's going to do it for this week edition of Amigos. So we thank you all for listening or watching or consuming this valuable content, to use some of the worst words ever conceived. Consume our content, will you?
Man, when you get a chance at the front page of Twitch, this is what happens right here. Yeah. Now we're content creators.
Remember to click that, ding that bell.
Ding the dong and do the dance. That's it.
We'll see you guys next week. Until then,
adios.
Adios. All right. Hey, thanks, guys, for coming. Thanks for hanging out with us this evening.